It's the end of the year, and as we reflect on it, one thing that will forever be etched in our memory is how our nation and we as a people confronted our legacies of police brutality and systemic racism. We will remember the faces of Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and so many more. And we'll remember the images of hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets in protest and sometimes being met with violence and counter-protest. Boston Globe columnist Janae Osterholt is making sure that we also recognize and remember a joy that persisted through it all. Her new series, A Beautiful Resistance, is a celebration of that joy. It profiles Black Bostonians and Massachusetts residents, homeowners, performers, artists, more, as a reminder that Black life is more than suffering, even in the face of injustice. Janae joins us now. Welcome back to the show, Janae.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So this is a rewriting of a narrative, a rejection of a largely white narrative this year, that Black life, especially this year, is suffering. In the weeks during the protests over the summer, what were you seeing from journalism, from the media, that made you say, we need a different narrative?
It wasn't just what I've seen this summer and this year. It's kind of the long-lasting, persistent narrative of what it means to be Black in America, as defined by gatekeepers in the media, which tends to always be through the lens of brutality, always through the lens of inequity and suffering. And while white supremacy is a reality in America, and so is inequity, and Blackness is not a burden, that suffering does not define us. It's not who we are. Sojourner Truth has a pair of quotes, and it's, you know, life is a hard battle anyway. And if we laugh and sing a little as we fight the good fight of freedom, it makes it all go easier. I will not allow the light of my life to be determined by the darkness around me. And I feel like because we've had so little control over our narrative and over our imaging, the narrative has become brutality, it's become crime, it's become violence, it's become suffering. And that strips us of power and agency. When you don't own your story, it strips you of power. And when I got back from Minneapolis from George Floyd's first funeral service, I just wanted a way to wrap my arms around us and hug us, because we can't hug each other right now. And I also wanted a way for people to understand we're more than this, and celebrate us while we're here, while we're alive. You shouldn't have to watch one of us be lynched for 8 minutes to suddenly invest in our humanity.
Janae, you talked about these other frames, these other images, brutality and violence. You chose joy, Black joy and Black life. And you come at that as a Black journalist. And you had a really interesting conversation about this with Boston-based photographer O.J. Slaughter, who is the focus of your third installation, about their documentation of this summer's protests. I do recognize that this is about more than just the documentation over the summer, but it was a remarkable moment, and O.J. Slaughter's documentation of community and joy. I'm going to play a little exchange from your interview with them about the agency of Black storytellers.
I am so sick of the story being told with the same image with different intent. I think that my platform allows people to see themselves through the work that I post, and it rings true to them, instead of feeling like, who is this white person talking about what happened in the situation, when that's not what happened at all?
Well, and it's not their lived experience.
No.
So I think it creates a different dynamic when you try to tell someone what racism looks like, or what it feels like, or what oppression feels like, when it's not something that you're actually feeling.
Can you talk more about this importance of someone who has lived experience themselves telling a story the way that you do, the way that O.J. Slaughter does?
It's imperative. Media, and not just legacy media, not just newspapers, but also digital media, like media period across the board, on TV, on the radio, in newsrooms, everywhere, like it doesn't reflect America. There are very few Black journalists and journalists of color in these newsrooms telling stories. And when you start to look at the coverage, you very soon realize coverage of Black and brown people is often crime, sports, celebrity, or murder. You know, we don't get the everyday living stories. And when we do, they're not the centerpiece. They're not, you know, above the fold. They're not with beautiful big pictures like the ones that white people get the luxury and privilege of having. Black journalists have always done this work. Black newspapers have always done this work. But when you are a black journalist at a white paper, at a paper that's dominated by all white editors, trying to explain the importance of telling stories like these for years and getting them to get the big A1 coverage, the big centerpiece coverage, has been hard for journalists all over the country, because you soon realize that you kind of have to validate and define things that no one else has to validate or define, where people don't understand how something works. And that chips away at your spirit a little bit. It's the friends, you know, I often use the dynamic, the story of friends and living single. Everyone knows what friends is. If I write a story and I reference Ross and Rachel, no editor is going to say to me, explain, you know, that Friends was this hit TV show that stole from Living Single. If I write about Living Single, an editor will ask me, well, you know what, you might want to put a sentence in there and explain what Living Single is. And that's a very hard thing to grasp, like to constantly be put in a place of validating your lived experience, which is why we need more Black editors. We need more Black journalists in the room, more Spanish-speaking journalists in the room. And in Boston, more French Creole-speaking journalists in the room.
Your videos and the articles really bring us to leaders, community organizers, artists who are having a lived experience in Greater Boston. I want to play a little more sound here. This is Mercy Bell, who is the subject of your first installation and a Black homeowner on Martha's Vineyard. Here is a clip from a video interview you did with Mercy Bell.
Until this year, I had a really hard time being here and enjoying myself, because there was like this, how dare we as a family have this much space to be in and this much beauty to look at? And it was really the first time I was here and just present and like feeling joy to be here was this summer.
This is a homeowner, someone who should feel that way all the time in the place they own, in the place they live. How powerful was it for the people you interviewed, for the people you spoke with, to have this opportunity to tell a different story and tell about themselves, you know, Martha's Vineyard in this case?
You know, I don't want to speak for them on how it feels for them, but I will say that readers who have not got to see themselves with this type of branding and this type of real estate in the paper and online have been very fulfilled. I think getting a platform like this and being able to share your story gives you agency. It gives you access, and it lets people know that, you know, even if you do, like, I know that Mercy and OJ know they matter, but it does mean something to have representation and to also be able to connect to the community at large. And media just can't keep shutting us out. It just can't. It's not a sustainable model. You don't cover these communities, you serve these communities. And for too long, we forgot that we're supposed to be serving the community and telling the truth. And if you only tell the story of pain, you're not telling the whole truth.
Yeah, there's more than a century of Black homeownership on Martha's Vineyard. I wonder, were there readers who were completely unaware of that when you...
There were. So many. And it's very sad, but it's the reason why, you know, despite a century of homeownership there, despite some of the, you know, the first freed slaves being able to buy land there, people don't know these stories because the American way is not to tell stories of Black triumph and Black victory. Those aren't stories we tell. We erase those stories, because when you erase those stories, you disempower a people. And that's what journalism has to be, start becoming accountable for and start performing correctives over. Like, we have been complicit, our industry has been complicit in disempowering a people by not telling the whole story.
You know, in your conversation with O.J. Slaughter, you talk about the importance of who the storyteller is. We touched on that. But also about how, as a Black journalist, you not only document Black life, but live it every day yourself. You can step away from your job, but not who you are. You've titled this series Beautiful Resistance. How is your life Beautiful Resistance?
You know, I think my life is a beautiful resistance because, as Toni Morrison would say, we do language. You know, I get to do words. I do story. I witness. I mark time and space. You know, every story I write, every column I write is an opportunity, a privilege to use my space to amplify the importance of equity and social justice in protecting culture and community. You know, we've been so tricked into thinking that there's a such thing as voicelessness when there is not. There's systems that create the illusion of voicelessness. There's systems that silence and suppress. But that's not who we are. And, you know, my resistance is the words. It's the language. It's the writing. It's moments like this, the beautiful resistance, being able to go into a room and say, this is the story that we need to tell because these people matter. I matter too.
That is Boston Globe columnist Janae Osterholt. Thank you so much for taking the time for us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.